Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Please welcome to the show this evening, Larry Eisler III.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Think about the last time you were in a location and you met somebody who would ultimately become what I call your partner in crime. But in this particular case, we're not talking about a crime mystery here. We're talking about two gentlemen who came together, who both had different paths in life, became exceptional investigators, and then turned themselves into tremendously great filmmakers. Dan Norvell and Larry Eisler III are not only authors, producers, and paranormal investigators, they are exceptional filmmakers. Dan and Larry partnered up as Small Town Paranormal in 2010 and the Ghost Hunter Dan Norvell Project in 2012. However, Dan has been investigating the paranormal since 1996. In their time together, they have produced the Paraflix original series called Expedition Entity and the documentary Broadhead Manor, a Paraflix special investigation. Both can be seen on Paraflix. They have also published two books, the Afterlife Anthology and The Ghosts of the Black Hawk War. Both books can be found through Haunted Road Media. Outside of the paranormal, Dan has spent 17 years in law enforcement and is a retired firefighter and paramedic. Larry spent 10 years in the Army before his medical discharge, and he has graduated not only with a Bachelor of Science in History, but soon to graduate with a master's degree in communication studies. Together, Dan and Larry co-own Small Town Productions, LLC. We had a lot to talk about this evening, so sit back and relax as we go on a journey of not only some very interesting investigation work, but also what has turned into some exceptional filmmaking documentaries. Please welcome to the show, Larry Eisler III. Well, good evening, Larry, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
What I like to do is I like to start a foundation with my guests, and I like to go back as far as you can possibly remember, because we all have a starting point of something, either paranormal, cryptid, extraterrestrial, whatever, that kind of sparks our interest in this field. And you and Dan are very, very much immersed in this field and do a lot of investigation work. And so I'm going to have you start. Go back as far as you can and tell us a little bit about where it all began for you.
Okay. Now, I remember the first time I had an interaction with a spirit, but I actually think it dates a lot further back. When I was a very young kid, elementary school age, I never liked sleeping in my bedroom. I don't know why. I'm much older now, so I don't remember too much about it back then. But I remember that most of the time, either I'd go to sleep in the hallway outside my room, or I'd fall asleep in my room and wake up in the hallway. So at a young age, I did not like staying in my room. In middle school, I forgot, I don't know. Was sleeping in my room again. In high school, me and my sister switched rooms. I was the older one. I had the bigger room. It was great. Loved it. And then I left to go into the Army and do basic training. And she took the larger room back over. So when I came back, I'm now out of basic training in my old childhood room. So the room had a very large bunk bed. I'm 6'2", and it was probably a 7-foot tall bunk bed, so I could stand under the desk portion of the bunk. And, you know, I had one of those old 19-inch tube TV, the box TVs that everybody had back in the early 2000s, shoved in a corner of the room because that's the only way I could watch TV from bed. And I remember, you know, you'd lay in bed and like a show or a commercial would end, it'd go to black and then it'd flash for whatever was next. And in that flash, I saw two little hands on the railing of the bunk bed and just a little face coming up over the railing. And remember, this is 7 feet high. So I remember light skin, dark hair, and very vividly a bright red coat or hoodie or some type of a jacket. Mm-hmm. Well, that freaked me out. Mm-hmm. And it happened several times until I eventually moved out. I went on my deployment, came home from my deployment, and then got into the paranormal. Mm-hmm. So oddly enough, I got into the paranormal to disprove the paranormal. So I joined a web forum of all things, the things that don't exist anymore. It was Bachelor's Grove Forums.com, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And I was going through photos and basically saying, hey, this is how you faked that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people got mad, justifiably so. And somebody said, you need to stop tearing people's evidence apart and you need to come out and do an actual investigation. Mm-hmm. So I went out and saw a lot of unbelievable things that night. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of sparked my interest ever since. Mm-hmm. Well, as I got more into the paranormal and I was talking with my sister one day about it, she happened to bring up, did you ever see a little kid in a red coat? What? Come to find out, she had the same experiences in that room too. Mm-hmm. So now I think my first experience probably actually happened when I was a little kid too. Mm-hmm. And either I don't remember it or the vibe was wrong and I didn't like it, so I got out of there. But yeah, that was kind of my first experience. And then
so how old do you think that this child was that peeked up you know, over the railing of your of the bed? How old? Just give or take ballpark.
Both my sister and I think he's in the ballpark of like 7 to 9-ish.
Oh, 7 to 9. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, and the red coat aspect, when you talked with her about that red coat, that's very interesting because if she's seeing it and then she sees that, would you say it was more like a translucent kind of red coat, or did it look about as real as anyone would say, yeah, they're wearing a red coat?
Real.
Really?
Red coat. Yeah. And that's funny because, you know, even as an adult in the paranormal now, I don't see the spirits as they are.
Yeah.
I don't see them vividly like that one time that I did. I always see shadows.
Yeah.
So, you know, and at that one point in time, I was able to see all these details, but now it's more shadows or fragments and stuff like that. But I very vividly remember red coat, red jacket.
Did you ever investigate that house? Is it still existing? Did you ever investigate to try to figure out why this little boy was there?
No, we never investigated it. It was originally an old 1900s farmhouse that my parents built onto with an addition. Mm-hmm. And the bedrooms were in the addition. Mm-hmm. And then sometime in my 20s, they literally tore the old farmhouse down to the foundation and built it back up. And then touched up the addition. They didn't tear that down. But ever since they did the renovation, no little boy in a red coat. My son is now in that room when he visits my parents' house, and he's never had any experiences. Mm. He's into the paranormal. I brought him places like Broadhead Manor. So I imagine if he's experienced something, he'd tell me right away. So he's never had anything. And I don't know what happened, but it appears to have either moved on or went somewhere else.
Yeah, you know, you hear of these things, especially with the structure aspect of it. You said you tore it, they tore it down and then they rebuilt it back up. Did they rebuild it by chance? Not that this, I'm going anywhere with this. I keep thinking like, sometimes things are stuck in certain elements, or they go into certain elements, and like the wood or something that they had there, or whatever. Of course, it's not familiar anymore to this little boy, but the essence of this little boy, I don't know if that got brought. You hear of this once in a while. I'm going to use this as an example. I heard of this a year or a couple of years ago, where some of these airplanes that have crashed, and some of the sheet metal on these airplanes that were brought to reused in others, in for new airplanes or for whatever, all of a sudden those airplanes became haunted with those that had passed away in that an airplane that broke into pieces. So I've heard of this before, that it's kind of weird that something would embed itself in the metal, or possibly if it got slung hard enough against a piece of metal, I suppose that energy could exist and stay there. I'm trying to figure out if there's anything that would have been involved with the wood or something else there that this little boy would have had embedded himself into. I don't know. Have you ever heard of this before, or am I the only one who's kind of heard of this?
I have I've heard of things that are more conductive, like iron nails and iron pipes and stuff like that, that attachments being fixed to those things. As for the house, I have no idea. It was a 1900s old farmhouse. There were still a lot of old 1900 things in the basement and in the attic. When my parents were going through and getting rid of things, he could have been attached to anything there as well. So it's hard to tell. And at the time I was living in Rockford, so I was an hour-ish away. And I wasn't too keen on trying to figure it out. I'd forgotten mostly about it even at that time. And didn't start remembering it until just a couple years ago, when my son started getting into the paranormal, and my sister asked about the little boy in the coat, and I'm just like, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
It's kind of interesting. And so, well, one of the things that Larry and Dan and I were kind of in a discussion about before Dan had to part was a cemetery situation, and that you guys do investigate a number of cemeteries and have for quite a long time. But there was a we were talking about the provoking and going in, people being disrespectful and going into cemeteries and provoking, whatever might be in there. But he had an occurrence. Larry, would you mind kind of revisiting that situation, especially where he was pulled over the fence, and what was going on that night? What kind of things happened before that incident happened? Take it from there.
Sure. Dan and I have been investigating together for almost 14 years now. And the first 3 or 4 years, we were always in cemeteries. There'd always be some rural cemetery. He'd be like, "Have I ever brought you here? I have no idea. You brought me to 700 cemeteries. Okay, we're going to go tonight." And we'd literally be investigating cemeteries from midnight until the sun comes up. So somewhere in the course of this grand adventure of cemetery visiting, he takes me to this cemetery. It's attached to a present day fully running church. It's a graveyard technically. And we're doing stuff on the, we always stay outside the cemetery. So we're at the fence. We don't cross the threshold unless given permission to. So we're at the fence, and I'm doing a spirit box, ghost box thing with our friend Marcia. And he wasn't a part of it. It was just her and I. So he's at the fence, just kind of like this, mm-hmm. with his arms over the fence,
yep.
just kind of leaning and looking out to see if he sees any movement or anything. And out of nowhere, he gets grabbed and yanked up over into the cemetery.
Yeah.
And the only reason he didn't go fully in is that his legs were caught on the fence. So he couldn't go completely over. And I always laugh thinking, like, these are Dan's legs. Like, but no, that's what his legs were caught. And he was kind of bobbling at the top of the fence. And just as quickly as they grabbed him, they let go. And he came, you know, and pushed himself back.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm sitting there looking at him, and Marsha's looking at him, and we're just like, what the heck are you doing?
Yeah.
And he got grabbed. So, you know, we're talking to him about it, and, you know, we click our little flashlights out, and on his forearms, there's legitimate handprints from when he was grabbed. And then several hours later, you know, because we do this all night long, into the wee hours of the morning, they were gone.
Yeah.
And he never complained about them burning or itching or stinging, and they were just red, and then they weren't. Mm-hmm. They were just back to normal again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things I offered up after he told that story was, and everyone's heard of the handprint that ended up on my body, and we're still to this day, I don't know, there's 5 theories out there that I've had psychics tell me, and it's kind of like pick the theory of the month kind of thing, but mine didn't hurt either, and it mm-hmm. stayed on my body for 3 hours, and people ask all the time, well, did it just suddenly slowly disappear? And I said, no, it just disappeared. And yeah, and it's here and then it's gone. And so there's a difference between having something fade away and having something say, now you see me, now you don't, and it's gone. And that's what he was describing his to be like too, but his lasted a few more hours than mine did. But mm-hmm. you know, and of course, yeah, you know, mine was placed on me. Who knows how long it was on my body before I came to the realization of sure. actually seeing it, right? So it yeah. would have been.
Well, you also have to wonder about the intent too.
Yep.
You know, if a spirit were to touch you like this,
yep.
You know, there's not much force there.
Right.
But if you're gripped like this,
yep.
Is it going to last longer because of the force it's trying to exert to pull him?
Right. Right. Yes. Maybe. Yes, exactly. I mean, now that I think about it, this is the first time tonight where I actually had asked the question, even to myself, how long was that thing on my body? Although I can tell you that at 2:00 in the morning when I went to bed, because I'm a night owl, workaholic mm-hmm. night owl, and I thought it was yeah. my husband's shampoo, you know, it was around 2:00 that I smelled this really kind of horrible Victorian but more putrid smell, and then of course it could have happened right then and there, and from I would say then technically by the time I noticed it by getting up, let's say maybe 9:30-ish or something, it might have been on my body for 7.5 hours or 7 hours. So there you have it. But I do know that after that point, though, it still lasted another 3. But the question always remains is, where did this thing come from? And did you guys ever take pictures of that? Or did you not really have any equipment with you at that time to take any kind of pictures of what was on his arms?
So this was back in the day when paranormal equipment was extremely expensive.
Yeah.
Marsha had a 720p camcorder that was several $1,000s.
Mm-hmm.
And then me and Dan were still in the day of using the mini DV camcorders, mm-hmm. which yeah. were still $800 back then.
Yeah.
And no, we didn't have any kind of cameras or anything. Unfortunately, we did go back there several other times to do other things.
Mm-hmm.
And pictures were taken, but that was so long ago that we have no idea where they're at.
Yeah.
But that same location is also where Dan got his nasty attachment, which may or may not be related. We don't know. Not sure. But it was the same graveyard. It was the same location, and that attachment, he was with him for several weeks, if not months, until he finally was pushed away.
How did he figure it out that he had this attachment? Did he ever say, I feel weird, or did his behavior change? How did he come to realize that he had this attachment?
The negative spirit, it was a grump, started stalking Dan's daughter and appearing in her doorway. And there was one day he was talking to me on the phone, and his kids were playing out in the yard. And all of, on a clear day, no wind, the swing started swinging.
Yeah.
And then came to a dead stop.
Yeah.
And then after that, he was just like, that's it. I'm done. This thing's got to go. We called a friend of ours, Sandy Wells, who was a really strong psychic, and a friend of hers, which is really strong psychic, but also did astral projecting, which was my first experience with that. And that kind of blew my mind. Came in extremely skeptical and came out, what the heck was that?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this lady lived in Washington State, the mm-hmm. other side of the country, and mm-hmm. she's explaining what Dan's living room looked like. And she's like, I'm wrestling with it in the living room. And then all of a sudden the blinds would smush against the window. And we're just like, oh, the little twisty stick on the blinds mm-hmm. would start doing this. And it's like, what is going on here? We're the only ones in the house.
Yeah.
So that was a several hour ordeal before that spirit got out. And really haven't been back since.
Yeah, it can take a while for some of these, I call them poltergeists, but annoying pests or attachments.
He was annoying.
Yes, give up and leave or mm-hmm. stop being a problem. And I had that in my own house. Now people will say to you, and they've asked me this question, are you sure that you weren't doing that or causing that yourself? Like, I'm the poltergeist. Now, I am telekinetic, psychokinetic. I am all the clairs. I'm an incredibly sensitive empath. I can feel very, very deeply, but I really do believe to this day that that was not necessarily me locking myself out of the house, having very, stuck wardrobe doors where you have to take a pliers or something to pull the door open, just fly open, things shooting in my pantry against the door. I could go on and on. And also my favorite ones, trying to kill me by tripping me always down and causing me to fall going downstairs. And so when you get stuff like that in your house, I can't believe all the time that we are causing that ourselves. And you guys have investigated in many different kinds of places. Tell us a little bit about some of the different kinds of places that you've investigated.
Sure. Well, our most public investigations obviously are the show for Expedition Entity, mm-hmm. where we do a lot of museums or public locations, battle sites and stuff like that. And that's all stuff that's okay to film. But for a long time, we did residentials and private cases and cleansings. We never filmed those. If we did film those, it's just to show the other party, this is what was happening at the time. Yeah. It never got posted or anything. Yeah. So, a lot of that stuff will never be seen.
Yeah,
it's locked in a hard drive that will never get uploaded. Yeah. There was one particular case I remember that was maybe 2019, 2018, mm-hmm. somewhere around there. This woman had this really tragic event happen to her when she was younger. Mm-hmm. We'll leave it at that. And she repressed it. And when she was in her 20s, she created a negative entity, a negative manifestation of an entity that was harassing her and her husband and stuff like that. And she wasn't able to get it off of her until she dealt with the trauma that had created it. So that was causing poltergeist-like activity. Yeah. And it was always centered around her when she was home.
Yeah.
But it would also show itself as shadows and stuff like that. So that was a really weird one. And, all we could do was basically try to get her to realize that it's not a real thing. It's not a spirit. It's not a demon. It's something that she created. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once she started going through therapy, after about a month or so, they said they haven't experienced it since.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can talk about it because we keep things vague.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have a lot of experiences like that. Dan likes to tell the story of a cleansing he did of a young boy where on the recorder, you can hear the spirit of a young boy telling the alive young boy to kill himself to join the spirit.
Oh, yes.
And when Dan did this cleansing, he said you could see the shadow leave this person and run out of the room.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
So, you know, but that's all we ever really talk about it because it's all the rest of it's private.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
I think that that's really fascinating when you think about it. I mean, how much of this is being created by ourselves, for those of us who have had a number of experiences, yet, and yet wonder about whether something is like existing. For example, that little boy in your room with the red jacket or coat on is probably not or was not a part of you. I would speculate not, because your sister, not to say that it couldn't still be a part of you, also saw it during different situations as well. It's hard to say, but that's very
And she saw it at times where I wasn't in the house.
Yeah.
To where if I created it, it would probably be attached to me because it's feeding off of me.
Okay.
So, you know, that's what happened with the negative entity for the young woman. You know, it was always with her because it needed her to continue.
Oh, I see. Kind of like,
once that link broke, it had nothing to feed off of anymore. And it just, you know, that was it.
So that brings me to another question, which I know it's going to be either controversial here or whatever. Mm-hmm. So the question is, because you guys, so when I did a lot of photography, you know, and I had a lot of different variety of cameras, okay. Each camera would also have its own type of, I suppose you could say, for the filter on the lens of it, which would either show or not show some of these orbs that are in a person's room or whatever. Now, I know that I have infrared cameras in my house now because of what had happened to me with this either poltergeist activity or whatever it was. And my husband started hearing things, and I've also seen things also in the hallway and all kinds of things going on. And then I see these propelling orbs, you know, very methodically and controlledly going across the room or going down and then turning around and going down the stairs. So it was doing it very, not going straight, but turning as if it was going down a stairwell. What are your thoughts about, I'm sure with what you do and all of the filmmaking that you do, you run into this continuously. Do you have filters on your cameras or do you see this stuff a lot? What are you making of it?
So the camcorders we use for the show have IR filters.
Mm-hmm.
So we film in IR just because otherwise you're in the pitch black with a really bright light on your face and it's really hard to see sometimes.
Yeah.
The amount of dust orbs, moisture in the air, bugs, a million different things that cause orbs. You know, it's to the point now where most of the time I see it, I'm ready to discredit it until it does something truly amazing.
Yeah.
I've only experienced one orb on camera, and we haven't put it out yet because it's a part of a bunch of random footage that I don't know what to do with.
Yeah.
We were at Broadhead Manor. We were with one of our investigators, Jen, and her daughter. We kind of like a kids' night where the teenagers can come and try it out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And Broadhead's pretty safe. It's a safe location for, you know, kids to try things.
Yeah.
And it was around this time-ish. So, you know, Broadhead has no heat. It has no air conditioning. It's just a cold building.
Yeah.
So as cold as it is outside, it's just as cold inside. There's no bugs. There's not a whole lot of dust in there. in the room that we were in, if there was dust, it would be a lot on the camera.
Yeah.
Whatever it was hovering around Jen's daughter and just kind of did one of these things.
Yeah.
Except I'm watching it on the screen and I look over. No, that's not a bug.
Yeah.
No, that's still there. It's definitely not a bug.
Yeah.
What the heck is that?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bug.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe it could have been a true orb. I still have to go back and find that footage because I don't know what to do with it for right now. But every other time I've seen something that could be an orb, it's explainable.
Yeah.
Now I've seen lights and streaks of light with my eyes. And those, I don't know. I've seen, you know, random red color, just like a poof, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
Especially in the peripherals is mm-hmm. when I tend to see things the most, shadows and those little random lights.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about a spirit, and if it's made of energy, it has to have a pinpoint.
Right.
Energy doesn't just exist freely, it radiates out. So is that pinpoint what we see as the orb because the lights and the energy is most concentrated there? Maybe. It's hard to say. With the way the light spectrum works, you know, if that pinpoint is the visible light, is the radiating out, is that on a different part of the light spectrum? Is that now the UV spectrum, X-ray, gamma, and so forth and so forth? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's really hard to prove because we don't have anything that goes beyond UV at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't happen often enough for me to be able to say, yeah, that's an orb.
One of the most amazing experiences that I had was in a castle over in Europe. And I had a camera. I believe it was set to infrared. I purchased it from a gentleman in Hawaii who said it was basically ready to go and an excellent apparition capture or orb capture or whatever. But anyway, in the room that I was in, I thought I'd try it out because it was known to be one of their most haunted rooms. And I knew the story of like there was, what was she like, kind of the nanny, and the two children were in that room at some point in their life. And then some fire happened, I think, and it killed them all. And somehow they stayed in that room. Okay. So I'm in there and playing around with my camera. It was a video camera, and I opened it up and I had it ready to go and everything. And I immediately saw it wasn't round orbs. What it was is it looked like three little masses, and they were dancing in front of me, which was absolutely frightening. And I just thought, my husband, yes, this was the most frightening. I have a sketch of it too that I show once in a while when I do interviews. And so my husband was in a room where he could not see what was going on out in the main bedroom. And I'm sitting there and I am just absolutely terrified because I picked up, they're just kind of hovering and they were dancing right in front of me. And I started talking to them in a nice manner and introduced myself. And I just kept rolling on and it was on record and everything like that. But I did about 5 minutes of it before then they came at me, they backed up, they all expanded, and then they all like that whooshed right out through a very solid door. And I said to myself, wow, that's going to be some amazing thing that I just captured here. Well, the little darlings, I think when they came at me, whatever it was that they did, they erased my footage because there was like absolutely nothing. But they came back at 1:30 in the morning, the little darlings, and they started playing with my computer. And it was, and I said, knock it off. I said, you erased the footage that I had of you. You cannot come in here and now play with the computer. Get out. I'm tired of you. And I went over and I unplugged the computer, right? And I don't know if they did this to me or if I had something like, they always say, try not to eat the salads when you're not used to the type of salads in different countries, you know, and I don't know what happened, but I was absolutely violently sick the next day. So ill, I couldn't even begin. I thought I wasn't even going to make it out of the place we're at. But it was when they expanded and then they went whoosh right through the door. And I thought that was the most amazing thing I ever saw in my life, but nothing recorded. So that brings me to a question to you guys. You do an awful lot of filming in all these different places where it's a cemetery or a building or this or that or whatever, or under a bridge. Have you ever had your equipment messed with, and what did they do?
So this is actually season one of the show. There's the season one finale. We were at Broadhead Manor, like my favorite place to go. But this was like the first real investigation we did there, and we did it for Expedition Entity. And we're on the first floor in what used to be the funeral parlor room.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, we were using these wired field recorders, are called Tascam DL10s, where it was a wired lav and then it fed into the battery pack. Yep. So it recorded to a micro SD card, and then you pull it out and you get to line up all the audio. It was a huge pain.
Mm-hmm.
But they're independent recorders. So it's not like if something happens, you know, all the recorders die. No, they save independently. Well, during the investigation, it was August, and the building was probably 95 degrees inside. It was brutally hot. And we'd already been there for a couple hours, and it was rough, but it was doable. Mm-hmm. And we're in this funeral parlor, and we just finished one session, and we were switching things up to do another one. And mm-hmm. I had to leave the room to go and grab something mm-hmm. so we could start again. And I left our static cam running. Mm-hmm. And thank God I did, because I wouldn't have caught this. So as I go and leave, Dan and Bill, the building owner, are sitting there talking. And then all of a sudden, at the same time, both of them get this really big chill.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dan just goes, and then you can see Bill just go, you know, like a serious chill.
Mm-hmm.
And in going through the footage and looking back at it, when I went to upload all the audio files, all of the microphones recorded all the way through to the end of the sessions, except for their two lav mics. Their lav mics both ended right at the chill.
Hmm.
So, and then the file all the way back to the beginning was corrupted.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it was two files of the whole time.
Yep.
But they both ended because when we start, we do the clap thing, and then you mm-hmm. line up all the audio to the claps.
Mm-hmm.
They both ended at the exact same time, which isn't normal because, you know, we didn't start the recorders at the same time.
Right.
You know, I start one and then I start the other. They're 30 seconds off from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So them both ending at the same time was extremely weird.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add to it the chill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't you find that mysteriously interesting how things like that can happen? And of course, the most common thing people talk about, and I've had this happen when we were at Pioneer Saloon and we were investigating in the evening time, we had, oh my God, it was absolutely unbelievable. The amount of attachments I had come at me and the amount of exposure to just whatever was out there. It was battery drain. Have you ever had incredible battery drain?
Yeah. So it's normal for almost all locations for one camera to be full and then all of a sudden it's blinking.
It's
like, all right. We hadn't even started yet. Go switch the battery out. And then because it happens so often, we bring chargers with.
Yeah.
So we'll plug the batteries in and start recording or start charging them right away because we know we're going to need them.
Mm-hmm.
There was one time we were on an investigation and Jen had one of those like Milwaukee drill batteries,
mm-hmm.
the really big ones.
Yeah.
And it went into the bottom of a giant flashlight.
Right.
So it's just this massive spotlight flashlight. And it was one of those big batteries that would last for days.
Mm-hmm.
It lasted for an hour and a half. And all of a sudden, this gigantic battery, we were actually using it to light the room.
Mm-hmm.
It just died.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all sitting there, like, talking, and all of a sudden, oops.
Yeah.
What? It's dark now.
Yeah.
And yeah, they drain that thing dead.
Yeah.
So it's normal occurrence for us.
When that happens, though, do you find that there's activity that complements it? Like, I don't want to say immediately or very shortly after, or do you think that the activity happens before because it's draining the battery in order to be able to do the activity? What's been your experience?
Nothing conclusive.
Mm.
A lot of times it seems like batteries are drained before we get ready to start.
Yeah.
So maybe it's like a preemptive drain to give them more juice.
Yeah.
For Jen's light, it was kind of at the end of a session and we were just kind of chit chatting a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's situational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. You
know, either they know they're going to spend some juice and they want just a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
or they use a little too much and they said, all right, I need to borrow this. Mm-hmm. And they take a little bit more.
Yeah, it's when that happens to a person, it is very interesting on what exactly is going on at that time, which brings me to the next question to you. And I've experienced this a couple times, and this is how I found out that I was clairaudient to some respect that led into all the other clairs. But before I get to that question, I should ask if I haven't already, or at least that was before we probably began the show. What type of sensitivities do you think you have? Because a lot of times, depending on what, I'm quite a beacon. So wherever I go, here they come, or they're trying to get my attention in some way, or I can feel it, or I feel sick, or, you know, whatever the case may be. I just know that I'm in the presence of something. How do you test your sensitivities? What do you know of yourself?
So we have a lot of friends in the paranormal that have a wide range of abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And this wide spectrum of sensitive to mm-hmm. psychic medium or whatever else is on the other side.
Yeah.
And everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
I always joke that if somebody on this spectrum is sensitive, I'm insensitive. I've got nothing. I don't get a visual. I don't hear voices. Things that I do hear are in the room that other people can hear. But I do get gut feelings, and you know, those are probably some type of sensitivity. You know, you do this for 14 years, you're gonna pick something up.
Mm-hmm.
And I can walk into a room and I can feel the heaviness, and I go, this ain't gonna be good.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get an extra battery for the camera because this is gonna be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But this ain't gonna be good.
Yeah.
Or I'll walk into a space and it'll be light and airy, and I'll be like, yeah, this place is great.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, that's about it. I don't mm-hmm. really have anything else going on. Now, Dan, on the other hand, is very empathic.
Mm.
And he wasn't always that way, though. A couple years ago, we investigated a location, you know, the Hanging Bride Bridge. And
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you know, he kind of got an emotional dump.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that triggered his empathic abilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like he got overjuiced or something,
mm-hmm.
and now his battery's got a little bit longer of a charge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now he can go anywhere and start picking up empathic type things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I haven't had that experience.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever will.
Yet.
Maybe I'm too stubborn, but
no. Yet.
Mm. Yet.
Yet.
I've been grabbed, I've been touched, I've been there was a short video. We were messing around at Broadhead in the janitor's quarters,
mm-hmm.
and I got grabbed from mm-hmm. from behind here on my yep. neck, and
yeah,
the only thing that I could say at the time was, I don't like this.
Yeah,
I don't like this.
Yeah.
And all the hair in my arms were standing up, like the muscles mm-hmm. in my arms and my mm-hmm. back were locked up tight.
Yeah.
And I was stuck.
Yeah.
I don't like this.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
There's a gal that I interviewed on the show a couple weeks ago. She calls it invitation to your awareness. And I thought, that's interesting, because I was telling her a few of these things that, you know, what we've been talking about here. And I said, you know, I don't know how, but I keep evolving. Just like maybe Dan is evolving to some level or a new level that maybe someone thinks that or something thinks that he's ready for. That's what I'm talking about, the invitation to becoming aware of the next level of energy or the next step. And then that, and ever since that issue or that situation by that bridge where it kind of grabbed his throat, you could actually feel what had probably happened, or
she hung herself, but we don't think she jumped. We think she lowered herself.
Oh.
So instead of getting that quick snap, she got the slow suffocation.
Oh, correct. Okay. Yes. And you've heard of that. Yes. Yes. And he felt all the way. And then all of a sudden it became very emotional because of just the depressed state of being that the person probably felt as they were taking their life. But how old were you when you saw that little boy in the red coat in your room?
I would have to say probably 18, 19.
Okay.
Ish.
So, and have you seen, I know you say you don't think you have a lot of these abilities, but that's an ability to be able to see something that clearly at that age, but it can go. So, you know, you can have it one moment and then all of a sudden you don't have it again. Just like, you know, things come and they go. But have you seen fragments of energy? Do you know what I mean by the electrical cobweb where it's so staticky walk right through
something? I can see that.
And you light up like a Christmas tree because your whole body is just going tingling to the point of I've been through those and I've had them. And only then can I see things light up like fragments of half people's faces or parts of their body or something like that. Have you ever had an experience like that yet?
So, I have light sensitivity in my eyes. So I see things in the dark better than I do in the light because my eyes get overexhausted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just this light on my face right now is really, really, really bright to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, in a very dimly lit room, I can still see perfectly fine.
Yeah.
You know, if I were to take this light away, this is a pretty dark room.
Yeah.
But for me, it's still very bright.
Yeah.
So with that, you know, especially on the peripherals, mm-hmm. I see a lot of shadows and you know, you said cobwebs, and I see a lot of those misty, cobwebby shapes. But it's never full figure. It's always this mass, this form, partial form.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely is it anything other than black. But for some reason, the guy on my stairs is like a red smoke.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that's about. I talked with my friend Diet, who's a really good psychic medium,
mm-hmm.
and she thinks it's tied to his clothing. And I'm like, okay, but get off my stairs.
Yeah. You mean where you currently live? Where you currently live?
Yeah. I have a basement room.
Yeah.
Then the rest of the house upstairs, and he goes up and down like there's a half landing, and then it goes back up again. He kind of stays in the landing and goes up and down the lower part of the stairs.
Interesting.
And then he messes with stuff, and it's like, you know, when the lights are off though, is when it's dark, is when I can see him.
Oh, interesting.
When the lights are on, it's like my eyes have too much light and I can't see him anymore.
Oh, that's, you know, that's very interesting though, Larry, what you just said. That might help people here understand their abilities a little bit more too, because I've got light sensitivity, but I don't know. I mean, I really haven't done a lot of in the dark stuff. And I know what you're talking about regarding the adjustment. And I also know because I'm looking into my own webcam, this light just kills my eyes every time I have to look into the little, it's so bright and it's just so annoying. But yeah, You know, that's interesting. Now, does this thing look like, did you say a mass, a red mass of something, or does it have a form?
It has a form. I've seen it take humanoid-ish form.
Oh, God.
You know, kind of a wavy shoulder, head, you know, always just kind of straight down into nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, formless. Maybe it's the state that I'm in, you know, half asleep or something, who knows. Mm-hmm. But it always seems to be like the last second that I see it and then yell at it, is when, you know, then it kind of takes off back up my stairs again, and then that's where I see that red smoke.
Interesting. And so your gal friend could not really pinpoint nothing negative. Right? Or
you want me to ask her?
Well, you could. I'm just trying to figure out here, when people hear of the color red, you know what they think? Demon.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
That's what they're going, oh, you got a demon running around. But not necessarily, unless there's something about that glow that it works for you, and whether or not anyone else has ever seen that, probably not, because your eyes are a little bit more sensitive than other people's eyes, is from what it sounds like to me, or different spectrum, right?
And yeah, I notice changes in light easier.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could be looking at you right now, but if let's say the cat walked across the doorway there, and I could see its feet.
Yeah.
I would notice that shadow.
Yeah.
Just the change in light. I perceive that over anything else. If the cat actually walked behind the computer screen, I probably wouldn't pay attention to it.
But
for some reason, my eyes catch that easier.
Interesting.
So, you know, the very slight shadow difference of the wall color changing, maybe I can see that easier because of my light sensitivity. I don't know. But it seems to be the case, and it seems to be really annoying because it only happens at night when I want to go to sleep. And then he's like, hey, buddy, it's time to talk.
Yeah.
Go back upstairs.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. But you don't feel fearful or afraid of it at all, do you? You don't get that sensation of fear. Yeah.
Just annoyed.
Just annoyed. Well,
it's an every night occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
Lately it hasn't been, you know, it's been happening less and less, but also, you know, I have a brand new girlfriend now, and she stays over with me, and she's, a psychic intuitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have to make sure, 'cause I'm not up to date on the terms.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's just like, yeah, I'm going to leave those two alone for now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but you know, when she's not there, that's when he wants to come talk. And it's just like, it's 2 a.m, dude, go away.
Yeah.
Like, I need to sleep. I have to get up at 7 to teach. Go away.
Yeah, you're kind of like a bright beacon. I mean, I'm a beacon. You're a beacon. You're a different kind of beacon, you know. And so, of course, as you get, you're coming into your awareness even stronger. Do you feel like your abilities are strengthening with all this work that you've been doing out in the field? Mm. I mean, seriously, you do so many investigations and you do them everywhere. And what you investigate seems to be from the very mild to sometimes the very grumpy or you know, angry.
Yeah.
And so, well, what are your thoughts?
We always try to tell a story, you know, with the Hanging Bride Bridge. We tried to start her story.
Yeah.
With the scout camp, you know, there in the 80s in that area, there was a lot of satanic activity.
Ah.
So all of a sudden we start getting satanic things across the ghost box and stuff. And just like, what the heck was that?
Yeah.
There was mob ties in the area. All of a sudden we start getting mob related things. And it's like, what the heck was that?
Yeah.
You know, so we're always trying to bring a story forth. And then you've got other locations like the Tinker Swiss Cottage and, you know, the Tinker family haunts the building. The entire family of like 7 people haunt their house. And, you know, we're trying to get them to tell their stories and, you know, the things they like to do, the things, the people they interacted with.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden out of nowhere, we were able to get Robert Tinker to talk about the portals in his house, and how he uses them to get ahead of the staff when they're going through the building so that he can mess with them.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
So, you know, all these locations we go to, there's always a story to tell. And you know, me being the director of the show and the person that's kind of spearheading the story of the episode, mm-hmm. as soon as we start getting into a story that I'm like, we need to hear this, mm-hmm. you know, then we start going, hey, ask more questions about this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this story kind of develops. Mm-hmm. You know, our latest episodes here, we were at the Freeport Masonic Temple in Freeport, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
We had this plan of, you know, we're gonna go to this location, this location, this location, see if we can talk to these spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we went to the stage auditorium area and spent half the night there,
mm-hmm.
because they were literally causing the lights on the stage to flicker.
Mm, cool.
And then Dan said, hey, can you just turn them off? And they went, oof.
Oh, my.
Like, okay, we're going to keep going with this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you start getting more into, you know, them answering questions, yes or no questions, and, mm-hmm. and trying to figure out who it is. Sometimes they'll tell you, sometimes they won't.
Mm-hmm.
But it also gives us the opportunity to start the story so somebody else can finish it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So someone else will watch the episode and be like, hey, those two big guys were here. They said this. Can you tell me more? And mm-hmm. then all of a sudden somebody else gets a name.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like starting a story or continuing a story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, focusing more on the spirit stories.
Mm-hmm.
Is that my invitation? I don't mm-hmm. know.
Your invitation,
is that opening
awareness?
Something up? Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that comes to my mind is, of course, you know this already, verifying the story. Have you ever gone to verify the story? What have you guys done?
Some locations we have.
Mm-hmm.
Others, there's just not enough information or no one's willing to share it.
Right.
Or I just don't have enough time to dig deeper.
Right.
You know, the benefit of the show is, you know, we're showing you the investigation as it happens to us.
Yep.
So you're also left to make of it what you will.
Yeah.
But there have been episodes such as Sledgehammers in Oregon, Illinois. There's a young boy that came across the SB7 saying, mommy.
Mm.
Well, you know, we're sitting there listening to it. And it's like, this voice has an echo.
Mm.
I don't think this was across the SB7. I think this was disembodied.
Mm-hmm.
Which ties to the guest investigator that was with us that night. Several years prior, they caught the same exact thing, mm-hmm. disembodied.
Mm-hmm.
So in another building in town, there's a photo of the silo being built by the construction crew.
Mm-hmm.
And in that photo, there is a young boy pictured there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is it the same young boy? Potentially.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't find any records of a young boy dying around the time that picture was taken.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they were workers that were coming into town,
mm-hmm.
it probably wouldn't be registered in town. It might be registered where the boy lived.
Right.
And we don't have that information.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes it's just a dead end and we have to say, well, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, being, you know, the filmmaker, we get the privilege of saying, well, what do you think?
Have you ever been in situations that were so dead silent that it made you wonder what was brewing behind the scene?
One comes to mind. There have been other times, but I don't recall enough of the details to be able to share it correctly.
Yeah.
But there was one time Dan and I were at a cemetery again,
mm-hmm.
and we were using the dowsing rod to communicate with a little girl, who several years prior, Dan felt grab onto his leg.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, you know, he estimated that girl was around his daughter's age and maybe there was a familiarity there. So we went back to talk to her and try to get her to pass on and cross over,
mm-hmm.
If she were indeed stuck. And she was. She didn't want to cross over. She was afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were talking with her. We were outside. It was the summer. The birds, the cars, the wind, there's all this stuff going on.
Right.
And, you know, we finally get to the point where, like, okay, we heard the pop. Okay, give us a sign that she's crossed over. No birds, no cars, no wind.
Yeah.
Nothing. It was just like,
yep. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And then, you know, maybe 5-6 seconds later, it all like whooshed back in.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's the one that I remember the clearest. Mm-hmm. I know there's been a lot of investigations where things just got eerily silent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like the air got sucked out of the room and you're uh-huh. sitting there and you're like,
yeah,
this is the calm before the storm. Something's about yep. to happen.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, devices are going off. You're seeing mm-hmm. shadows moving in the room. And it's just like, what is going on here?
Yeah, I find that very, I know it's fascinating.
So the easiest place to find me is going to be Facebook. I have a verified account. If it's the blue check mark, you know it's me. You can comment on the stuff that I post. You can send me a message, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You also have the Expedition Entity Facebook page. Outside of that, we're on Instagram as Expedition Entity. Both Dan and I have separate Instagram accounts. He's Ghost Hunter Dan Norvell. I'm Ghost Hunter Larry Eisler. Mm-hmm. If you go to our Facebook pages, there's also a link tree that has like 45 links on it.
Yes.
You can find everything on there. All the team's Instagrams, our Facebooks, YouTube, anything that you might want, the merch shop, it's all on that link tree. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is just find one of our accounts first, and you'll be able to get the link.
Thank you so very much for being on the show today.